Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 13th of January. This story has been weighing heavy on us this morning, the horrible earthquake in Haiti. And the news reports this morning say that it seems that the death toll from Tuesday afternoon's 7.0 quake would run into the thousands. The UN head of the UN peacekeeping mission was apparently among the dead, many others. A spokesperson for the International Red Cross said that one-third of Haiti's 9 million people may need emergency aid and that it would take a day or two to get a clear picture of the damage to emerge. We are not ignoring this story, of course. We plan to do a program on this tomorrow to find out the extent of aid that is needed. And a request to you as we start our program, as you'll recall, during our healthcare series just a little while ago, we did a program on Haiti, and many of you called in who were doing aid work in Haiti. You had done medical work there. I know there's one of our friends on Facebook who adopted a daughter from Haiti. In preparation for booking this program for tomorrow, we're particularly interested, Rhonda is, in finding people who have been doing work in Haiti who are from Wisconsin. And I know that there are many of you in this state. So I'm going to give you her email address to help her along, and we'd like to have a sense of what it is people in Wisconsin can do here. We'll get a better sense of how huge the need is going to be during the course of this day and a program on this tomorrow. So her email address is Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, at WPR.org. If you can help us out, that would be great. Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, at WPR.org. All right, first hour of our program today, we talk about Mark McGuire and his, as our guest calls it, mea culpa that was given on national television for an hour. It just went on for such a long period of time. Why is it that he didn't come clean in 2005? What did this do for his chances of getting in the Hall of Fame? Why did he take these drugs? Why did so many athletes take these drugs? Is there sufficient testing now so that this is no longer a problem in baseball? We talk about all of this hour of the program with Michael Bauman, who is national columnist for MLB.com, and he happens to be my husband, in case we have a slightly weird interview, so you know that I know him pretty well and have for a long time. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Michael. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email address here, if you'd like to reach us that way, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Kathleen.
How are you?
Reasonably well, thanks.
Good. Sounding very chipper this morning, I might add.
Well, that's fake, but let's go ahead.
Why did Michael McGuire come, or Mark McGuire, come clean in 2005 when he was testifying before Congress?
Apparently he was the victim of bad legal advice, because in his interview with Bob Costas that you just referred to, he was talking about his attorneys advised him that he was in legal jeopardy and he couldn't speak frankly about his steroid use. I think the record will clearly indicate that no baseball player has gone to jail for using steroids. Some of them have been suspended, and some of them are in trouble because they lied about taking steroids, Barry Bonds' federal perjury charges, for instance. But I don't think the mere use of steroids gets you sent away. So he should have come clean at some point well before this.
Right. Yeah, he kept saying the same thing. We were talking about this some last night, that he owed it to the body investigating him, the congressional body, to pay them some respect and go beyond, you know, the standard phrase, which he's being ridiculed for now. I'm not here to talk about the past.
When, in fact, that's all the congressional committee wanted to talk to him about.
Right, exactly.
Had he used steroids in the past? And his repetition of that phrase you just mentioned was not only arrogant, but gave you the clear impression that this is a guilty man. If the question is, did you use steroids, the correct answer is no. And if you can't provide the correct answer, then you've got problems. He couldn't. So an admission of guilt would have been better than his performance there.
Mm-hmm. You've covered baseball for a long time, Michael. What kind of guy is McGuire?
He's not the worst guy. I mean, he has some intelligence. He has a touch of arrogance that comes through in these situations, although his pals, his close friends like to say that it doesn't. It does. There's a haughtiness to him, but I don't think he's a malevolent character. I don't think he's a malicious character. I think he's deluded himself a little bit in this situation. But, you know, he's not the arch-villain.
Mm-hmm. He said that he took these because he was injured. Was he badly injured during the 90s, and do a lot of players use this kind of substance to help them heal from an injury?
Well, this has sort of become the standard steroid defense now. As if somebody takes steroids and they're found out to take steroids, their response is, well, I only took it to recover from an injury. Because it does have those properties that would help you recover faster from an injury. And he had a multitude of injuries in the mid-90s. I mean, he was missing time every single season for a while. So, I mean, I understand that that's probably a valid reason for him to take the steroids. But he went one step beyond that and said that the steroids did not help him in terms of hitting all those home runs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is ridiculous.
Yeah, that it wouldn't have made any difference. It was the man upstairs who gave him the gift,
right.
The eye-hand coordination, et cetera.
So these home runs were an act of God, not an act of the pharmacist.
Right.
You know, I mean, and that's a little off-putting to the rest of us just listening to that.
Yeah. So these drugs have been, and we were watching the news last night, they have been proven to allow people to hit the ball farther.
Yeah, it increases body mass, it increases strength, it increases bat speed. And you know, if you're 250 pounds instead of 150 pounds, the chance that when you hit the ball, it's going to go further.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. I mean, denying that is silliness.
Right. So why is it that people didn't notice, writers and people in the clubhouse, fellow players, certainly managers of teams and batty coaches, and look at these people like McGuire, also Sammy Sosa, and others, and say, holy cow, this is a much bigger guy than we were having on the field last year.
Well, that's a very good question. I'll give you two separate sets of answers to that. One of them is that 1998, which is the year that everybody focuses on, the year in which McGuire hit what was then a record-breaking 70 home runs. Everyone was caught up in this chase between he and Sammy Sosa. And the game was sort of, it sort of revitalized the game, which had the strike in 94 and 95, and people were alienated from the game, and baseball attendance was down. And this was kind of a thing that brought people's interest back. The home run sort of does that. It captures the public imagination. So a lot of people weren't looking too closely at how this happened. The other thing at the time, looking back, what people like McGuire tended to do was demonstrate to people they were lifting weights pretty much 24 hours a day. You know, where are you going after the game? Well, I have to lift. And it was that kind of thing. So they gave you the impression that they were constantly, constantly working out. And this was the reason that they looked like Charles Atlas.
Right.
So that there was it was kind of a cover story that went around. And it was fairly prevalent.
Mm-hmm. I must say, there's a part of me when I was watching him with you the other night that felt a little sorry for him. He needed Kleenex badly. He was sniffling so much. And you talk in your column that he teared up on numerous occasions under questioning from Costas that was persistent, probing, yet humane. I agree with you. I think Costas is very good, saying that he was sorry, listing particular groups. What about the emotional aspect of this? Did you feel sorry for him?
Not much.
No.
Not as much as you did, I think. And that might happen if anybody was seen crying on TV. You would feel sorrier than I would. But
that could be.
Yeah, exactly. This was undoubtedly difficult for the guy. And he explained that his parents didn't know, his children didn't know, his manager didn't know, his teammates didn't know, that nobody knew. And so it was difficult for him to come forward. And you acknowledge that it has to be difficult to do that after all these years, but then, you know, he's sort of in denial about the whole effect of the steroids, so that undercuts whatever sympathy I might have felt for him. And I've talked to a lot of people since then, and they feel exactly the same way. Is that all right? You went 95% of the way, and then you put it in reverse.
Mm.
You know, he undercut himself.
Mm-hmm. So you say what's missing is the admission that steroid usage did, in fact, add up to a competitive edge, an edge that was pharmaceutical, not human in nature, that he needs to admit to that, and then you'll feel better about the guy?
I'm not going to feel better about the guy in any event. I mean, he used steroids, and he used steroids in such a fashion that he hit home run records. And that you're trifling with the history of the game, and baseball is a game that, you know, is encapsulated by its history, its traditions. You know, the sweep of a whole American scene is out there in the baseball diamond.
Right.
And, while it's better that he finally came clean than sort of the opposite, his admission of guilt wasn't complete because he apparently doesn't understand it himself.
Hmm. I would imagine that because of the tradition in this game that you just mentioned, to be able to be admitted to the Hall of Fame for a baseball player is quite a big deal. Is Mark McGwire, tell me what what writers are thinking about his chances for entering that esteemed hall, how important it is to him, and whether or not he stands even a chance of getting in now.
Well, when we speak about the history of the game, I mean, Cooperstown is the central kind of location in that, because induction into the Hall of Fame is the largest individual accomplishment that any career can have. And all I can say about what I can't speak for the other 500 writers who are voting for the Hall of Fame, but McGwire's been on the ballot for four consecutive years, and he's always received about 23% of the vote, and you need 75% for induction. And that tells me that the vast majority of the baseball writers who are voting don't want him anywhere near Cooperstown. And I think that's understandable. Will this change now? I suppose that there'll be a certain percentage of people who feel, well, he came clean, finally, he's paid his dues, he's done his penance, you know, I'll vote for him. But I don't know that you're going to find three times as many people voting for him.
Yeah. I don't know how you can vote for anybody, though, and tell me how you could, Michael, if he was not honest. Those were not honest statistics, really.
Well, that's just exactly, Kathleen. And my view of it is, you know, again, if you use steroids, who am I to put you in the Hall of Fame?
Right.
How can I dismiss that cheating, that dishonesty, the lack of integrity there? I mean, because in voting for the Baseball Hall of Fame, you're supposed to not only consider the on-field accomplishments, but the character issues of the individual. Who was he in the community? Who was he as a man?
Mm-hmm.
And if he used steroids, if I voted for him, I'm violating everything the game stands for in that regard.
Right.
How can I? I mean, it would be just, you know, criminal. And so I can't do that. And maybe other people can. Again, I can't speak for all of them. And this is America. You have a Democratic election. Things happen.
Yeah.
But I hope not.
Michael Bauman is our guest, and we're going to start taking your phone calls. We're talking about Mark McGwire's acknowledging that he used steroids, not a surprise to many people, but his very lengthy performance on national television, MLB television with Bob Costas the night before last, his previous appearance before Congress in which he kept repeating that he was not there to talk about the past, what it does to baseball, what it does to his chances of getting in the Hall of Fame. We'll talk about his new assignment with the St. Louis Cardinals, all of that with Michael and with you. Our number, 800-486-8655. The email address, talk@WPR.org. Peter from Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just want to make a couple of comments and a question. And one, I'd say I agree that Mark McGwire has lousy public relations, but I think we're being way too harsh on him. He did take steroids in the 90s, and at the time, steroid use was widespread in baseball. And my understanding is that steroids were actually legal to use in baseball. So baseball players are very competitive. What do we expect them to do if, you know, not only their livelihood, but their salary, their standing in the world is based on how well they play ball? And if steroids are going to help them, they're going to use it, especially if they're not legal, if they are legal. And I just also note that, remember Barry Bonds, who obviously uses steroids, he started using steroids after the Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa had their home run year in 1998. Barry Bonds looked at those two and said, I can do better. And he did, and he started taking steroids. But what do we expect these people to do? I mean, we put them in competitive situations. They're very competitive people, and steroids are not illegal. So it's just, I think it's a natural response. I think the league is hypocritical. I think us as fans, we're hypocritical. We hold players up to a certain standard, and then we expect them to meet that standard competitively, but then, you know, 10 years later, we condemn them for it. I think we're being very harsh.
Michael?
I think, and that's an interesting distinction, and that, you know, serves as something that's in McGwire's favor relative to the other names the gentleman mentioned. The history of steroid abuse in baseball is, you know, prior to testing starting in 2002, 2003, the drug was not, you're right, the drug was not tested for in baseball because the Players Association insisted that this would be a privacy rights invasion for its members. The owners, as early as 1994, in collective bargaining, suggested a testing program. The players rejected it. There were other difficulties at that time, obviously, and there was a strike involved. But that's the reason there wasn't testing in baseball. The steroids were illegal in the larger society, and everybody else had banned them. As early as 1988, Ben Johnson, the Jamaican sprinter, was running for Canada, lost a gold medal and a world record because of steroids test. So the idea that they weren't, I mean, they were not tested for in baseball, but they certainly weren't smiled upon. And baseball was tardy only because of its labor management situation and getting to the core of this thing. So, yeah, I mean, there's certainly an inclination for people to get better and use every edge that they can, but I don't think we have to forgive them totally for it. You know, in this case, I think this is out of bounds. This is a drug that you're not supposed to have possession of anyway in this society. And if you're using it for, you know, professional gain, that's not exactly appropriate, whether you had testing or not. Now, obviously, baseball tests for it, and so it's illicit in baseball terms. You're right, at the time it wasn't, but it still wasn't any kind of a regular thing to do.
You had a follow-up, Peter?
Yeah, I think we should be condemning the Players Association and condemning the league. I think that the individuals involved were doing what came to them naturally. I think they were responding rationally to the situation that we put them in.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Peter. And what's the difference between the stuff that people put in their bodies? There's something that's tested for, Michael, and there's something that's not tested for yet?
Well, the steroid testing is now fairly extensive, and the substance testing goes along a long way toward eliminating the usage of that. The problem right now in baseball, and no one knows how much this is prevalent, is human growth hormone. They don't have a test for it that the players union will accept because they don't want their guys to have their fingers pricked. They only want your analysis. There's not an appropriate test for this drug, and there's, you know, that no one knows whether or not the usage of that is widespread right now or not.
And I bet the usage of that to keep people from aging is fairly widespread, and we don't know about it.
You'll recall that Roger Clemens' wife used HGH prior
right.
to their photo shoot for Sports Illustrated. She didn't want to be on the cover without HGH.
Right. And considering our drive to be forever young, I would imagine there's a big business going on with that, with a lot of people.
One assumes, yeah.
We got some problems, eh, Mike?
Absolutely.
Yep. Jan from Baraboo. Hi.
Hi there. I do not think he should go in the Hall of Fame or anyone else who has taken drug use, and if that means the Hall of Fame is very, very small, so be it. Pete Rose was, you know, he gambled, which was absolutely wrong, but they said no to him, which was fine. Football and basketball for a long time have been much more critical, and I think it's way past due that baseball has gotten a pass for so many years. I don't think it's right. I think it's a very bad example to young athletes that they see these pro taking that. So, no, I think that if they find out that a baseball player is taking any kind of drugs, I think they should be kicked out of the game. But then I'm probably being very harsh. So anyway, that's just my opinion, and thank you for listening.
Thanks, Jan.
There's no question, Jan, that this is an awful example, a terrible example, and a dangerous example. There have been instances of kids dying from steroid abuse. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Their whole life is ruined, and all they look at is somebody like Mark McGuire with these incredibly huge muscles, and, ooh, I can hit home runs, too. It's awful. I think baseball is moving in that direction, though. You know, they now have a 3 strikes and you're out policy. The first time you get caught for steroids is 50 games. Second time is 100 games. Third time it's life. Maybe it should be life right away. But at least some penalties have been instituted that are reasonable. And I think with the testing programs that's in place, baseball was late on this. There's no question about it. But it has been taking steps in the correct direction.
And what do you think about McGuire being signed down now to be a batting coach with the St. Louis Cardinals? Was that a bad decision? Should he just have been required with his admission to leave the game?
Well, there's a dynamic there with Tony La Russa, who's the manager who also managed him in Oakland. So they're old friends. During this period between 2005 and now, one of the few people in baseball who was defending McGuire and saying he wasn't guilty was La Russa. He was wrong about that. But this was a gesture of friendship and support, I think, offering him this hitting coach's job. And, so, and McGuire was a student of hitting. There was no question about it. He had improved his hitting over the years, apart from taking the drugs. So he ought to be able to transmit some of that to the Cardinals hitters. And I think it's an effort on La Russa's part to rehabilitate McGuire's image. Whether it'll be successful is another issue entirely, but it's understandable.
And what else do you think McGuire could do to rehabilitate his image?
Well, I mean, he had a shot with all these interviews, especially with the one with Costas, which was, you know, the focal point. And his use of Costas is one of the best interviews.
He was good, wasn't he? He is good.
He is very good, and he cares deeply about the game. You know, he sees himself as one of the gatekeepers. You know, he wants to guard the integrity of the game. He was a perfect choice for that interview. And I think that McGuire had an opportunity there, and he went 90% of the way and acknowledged that he was wrong. He made some real emotion, but then came back to the core issue and was incorrect. You know, like, the steroids did not help me. I got these home runs because of God-given ability. Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that undercut his whole performance.
Michael Bauman is our guest this hour, first hour of our program today, national columnist for MLB.com, and has written, well, he writes all the time, but has written a couple columns this week on Mark McGuire's appearance and fessing up to using steroids. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with a writer who's getting petitions on, collecting petitions to get the California Protection of Marriage Act on the ballot. If passed, divorce would be illegal in California. We're also going to be talking about the federal trial over the constitutionality of California's ban on same-sex marriage, which opened on Monday of this week. Should be a good hour. And a reminder that we will talk about Haiti tomorrow on our program. Rhonda is looking for people who have been doing work in Wisconsin, from Wisconsin, in Haiti. And I know many of you called during the healthcare program we did on Haiti. If you've got information, you can help us out. Send her an email, Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, at WPR.org. Michael Bauman is with us the first hour. June from Toronto, our next caller. Michael, hi, June.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Perhaps age has something to do with this, but I remember when baseball was played without chemistry. And a lot of the people, like Stan Musial, for instance, Henry Aaron, and many others, played that game and did it well, hit home runs. Aaron hit the most until Bobby Bonds, or is it Barry Bonds? Don't remember which. And he did it with wrists, good wrist action. And I wonder whether this will affect record books in the future.
Well, I think that many of us who feel the same way that you do believe that the all-time home run hitter legitimately is still Henry Aaron. It's not Barry Bonds, because he used artificial means to create this record. And Henry Aaron, as the lady indicates, those guys were on they might have been on aspirin occasionally. And that was the heaviest drug they had.
And there was also, this is going beyond how you play the game, but this whole other story to Henry Aaron, right? This honorable man who played when circumstances were pretty hard emotionally.
Yeah, and these were real heroes of American society.
Right.
Somebody like Henry Aaron, who came up through Jim Crow in the South, and then when he was on the verge of breaking Babe Ruth's all-time home record, you know, was subjected to tons of hate mail and death threats. And he kept his dignity, and he kept his poise, and he kept his direction.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an example to every player out there today. These people, like Mark McGuire, who are they examples to? Somebody at the corner pharmacy. I mean,
that's a good question. June, thanks for your call. Earl from Medford, hi.
Hi, good morning. Great topic. I remember well the first year Henry Aaron was with the Braves and how small he looked and how he used his wrists and things. But I think baseball and the writers need to get more consistency on this character issue. I mean, at least McGuire is allowed to be voted on. But Shoeless Joe Jackson, for one, is thrown out of baseball now for many, many years. And Ty Cobb is in the Hall of Fame, but he was a racist, from what I read, and he went in the stands and punched out people and things like this. So it's really up and down, and no overall universal standard there.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, Shoeless Joe and, again, Pete Rose are not available to us because we do not determine who's eligible to be on the ballot. That's a committee of the Hall of Fame, and you know, that you have a legitimate argument in those cases. I will say that in terms of our voting on the steroid-era players at a meeting of the baseball writers last year at the All-Star Game, there were guidelines suggested for how we might do this, or at least to form a committee to form legitimate, reasonable guidelines that would provide some of that consistency. And at the end of the day, after a long debate, it was determined that we didn't need any guidelines because this was America, not Soviet Russia. And learn it. Nobody tells us how to vote, so that didn't go anywhere. And you know, I understand that too, but we are short of some reasonable consistency in this area.
Do a lot of writers take that into account, though, Michael, or not? Are you really holding back on thinking about a person's character?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I think the one thing I will say about this process is that those of us who vote see this as not only a privilege, but a solemn obligation, and it is taken extremely seriously. There's a lot of study, and a lot of debate, and just a lot of thought that goes into this process. I would say that the average baseball writer spends five times as much thinking about this election than he would about a normal political election.
Really?
Well, and in defense of that, in the Hall of Fame, there are always more viable candidates than you can vote for. You're in the position of selecting among people who are deserving. That's not always the case in American elections in the political arena. Sometimes you go to the ballot box and I can't vote for either one of these two guys.
I know you feel that way.
Yeah, I do. That happens. I mean, I think it happens to other people, too.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Earl, for the call. We have a couple lines open now if you'd like to join the conversation. They've been crowded. Michael Bauman is our guest. We're talking about Mark McGuire this hour of the program. And we go to Mike from Duluth, Minnesota. Hello, Mike.
Hello. I might lose reception here, but I'll talk quickly. Basically, I would just like to hear about maybe the last five people who have held the home run record, or 10, or whoever it is, because I know a lot of them, you know, I knew Babe Ruth was in there and all, and I'm just wondering if the people who break the record on any level are going into the Hall of Fame and standing next to the same people who did it without, like the woman said before, without any chemistry or anything like that. There's something that really bothers me about that, and it doesn't seem right that, you know, I can understand the judgment of character and everything too, but, yeah, I mean, it's like a human body versus, you know, an altered substance or an altered body, you know, by a substance, and it just doesn't seem right to me. I'd like to hear about who has held this record and then who holds it now. I don't know a lot about baseball, so I don't know if the record has been taken over by, you know, people recently other than Barry Bonds and Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa. So if you could just talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, Mike, thanks.
That's precisely the issue that you hit upon it right there, is that you're talking about normal human beings versus guys who are chemically created, basically. As far as the record, you know, the single-season record was held by Babe Ruth, and he also had the cumulative home run record. And then Roger Maris in 1961 hit 61 home runs and broke the single-season record. And then McGuire and Sosa both broke that record in 1998 in the single-season version. And then Barry Bonds broke the single-season. And finally, Henry Aaron's record for total home runs. The jury is still out on Bonds and Sosa and that whole group because they're only eligible for the Hall of Fame 5 years after they retired. So they haven't come up for a vote yet. They will relatively shortly, and we'll see at that point what the general consensus is. But at this point, you're talking about people who are not yet in the Hall of Fame and have not yet been voted with. The only guy from that era that we're talking about so far is McGuire, and the writers have rejected him in four consecutive years.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, is an encouraging development.
Is there another shoe to drop here, Sammy Sosa? What's he said about steroids?
You know, Sammy Sosa was, again, one of those guys who went before Congress and said, well, I really can't speak English, so I don't know what you're saying, which was, you know, phony. That was where Rafael Palmero, in that same session, shook his finger at the congressman and said, you know, don't accuse me, I never did this. And then 2 weeks later, he tested positive for steroids. So a lot of these guys, the credibility has been really minimized. And I think what you'll see with that is that there's a general sense among the writers that almost anybody from this era is, you know, is potentially guilty. With Sammy Sosa, you don't know. There hasn't been a conclusive finding about the thing, but people have their suspicions.
And we were talking yesterday that these, if Congress wanted to, they could have said, you're in contempt of Congress for lying to us. Could they have done that?
Well, there's an investigation of Roger Clemens as we speak for a potential perjury charge before Congress.
Huh.
So that could have happened. I think, you know, if you're Mark McGuire and you're sitting there saying, I'm not here to talk about the past, time after time after time, you're not being responsive to the questions of this duly appointed, duly elected body.
Right.
And you're treating them like they're some third-grade autograph seeker. You're dismissive of them. That's not the appropriate way to meet with this body. I mean, you have an obligation, it seems to me, as much as we might not like one congressman or another. When you get them together as a body, they're representatives of the American people, and you owe that respect.
Right.
And he didn't provide that.
Mm-hmm. Scott from La Crosse, hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, you know me. I'm a purist and a curmudgeon of the First Order who, you know, loves to go and watch a pitcher's duel.
Right.
So what I'm going to say here is I think the finger needs to be pointed very directly at the Lords of Baseball. I don't think Selig's been a good commissioner, and I think that the owners have run rampant. And do you, Michael, think there's any chance that every owner didn't know exactly what was going on? And remember the advertising slogan, chicks dig the long ball?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. What more do you need to say about what the owners, you know? I mean, I honestly believe, though, that I don't think any of this is new. I think if steroids had been around in Babe Ruth's era, everybody would have been turning a blind eye to that, too. I mean, I just think it might be the nature of the beast.
I think there's blame enough here to go around. And I think, again, in terms of the public, you know, the collective bargaining aspect of this, it was the union who stood in the way of there being steroid testing in the first place. But I think that all of us in the game, and I'm not only ownership, not only the labor union, but people in the media, too, wanted to be so caught up in this home run chase in 1998,
sure,
that we overlooked almost willfully what was right there in front of your eyes, that these guys looked like something, some other kind of being. You know, they were bulked up to the skies.
Yeah, and in a short period of time, too. I mean, you see these guys who are coming in. I saw Sammy Sosa when he played with the White Sox. He was a skinny kid out there.
Absolutely. And McGuire was relatively rangy when he came up as a rookie.
You know? It just seems to me that everybody had to have known it. I mean, but then again, I think this is, for me, Michael, I think it's part of baseball's bigger problem, which, you know, the sports center phenomenon, that people have short attention spans, they want the oh-wow moment, and baseball isn't an oh-wow sport. Baseball is a sport of nuance and intricacies, and people who go to the game just to see the fences knocked down by a blast, I don't think they're really into those pitchers' duels and intricacies.
Well, I'm with you every step of the way, but we may be a distinct minority right now. My favorite game is 2-1, so I love that. And you don't see enough of it anymore.
Hey, thanks, and thanks for looking out for the purest interest. I really do appreciate that, too.
That's okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. What do you make of Bud Selig's comments yesterday, Michael? The use of steroids and amphetamines amongst today's players has greatly subsided and is virtually non-existent, as our testing results have shown. The so-called steroid era, a reference that is resented by many players who played in their era and never touched the substances, is clearly a thing of the past, and Mark's admission today is another step in the right direction.
Well, I think the test results will bear that out. You know, they do have a legitimate testing program now, And the other people didn't look at the amphetamines. That was probably much more a part of the game for many more years than the steroids were. I mean, people were taking these so-called greenies, you know, to get up for these games. And that's not, that doesn't go on anymore because they banned that. I think the issue is that among people who are looking at the problems the game might have, is the human growth hormone. They don't have a test for it. Or how many people are using that? You don't have any idea. So maybe the steroids era is over, but the people who want to abuse drugs may well have moved on to something else.
Thanks, Scott. We go to Anita from Lindenhurst, Illinois. Hi, Anita.
Hi. Very interesting. I haven't heard any discussion yet about the responsibility of the players and the coaches and the owners and the domino effect socially, how this impacts our youth athletes, because they look up to these people, you know they do, and they think that's the way to the Super Bowl. And all we see later on is results possibly of character flaws, but also influenced by the hormone effect of the steroids, makes these guys so aggressive. And then we see them on the news, they've beaten their girlfriend, and the other one threw his girlfriend off the balcony, and on and on. And that also is setting an example for the youth athletes. And they know they can get away with it because they're the people they look up to get away with all of it.
Well, I think there's no question that this is not only a bad example, but a tragic one. I mean, there are cases of kids who have been, you know, affected fatally by steroid usage, and they don't think about the long-term effects of this drug, which are all bad. I mean, these guys who take them may be making millions of dollars over the short term, but their long-term health is not going to be anything that anybody wants to have. So I'm in total agreement with you. This is just an awful situation in terms of role modeling. But I think that someone like Mark McGwire not getting into the Hall of Fame sends a correct message to kids that you will be penalized if you do something like this. You may not go to jail. You may still make millions of dollars, but your legacy will be tainted for keeps.
Mm-hmm. Have we ever had any of these guys who were on steroids, be it baseball or football or whatever, who have talked about what happens once you come off these drugs and the effects of the drugs, fertility problems, heart problems sometimes, depression problems, suicidal thoughts, et cetera? Maybe we need all of them to do public service announcements in that regard.
Yeah, I think of there's several football players, among them Lyle Alzado, who, you know, died prematurely and talked before they were their demise about how debilitating the effects of this drug were. And you know, I think if somebody paid attention to that example, they'd understand how bad it potentially is. But there have been a few of those guys.
Michael Bauman is our guest. We're talking about Mark McGwire's admission of steroid use in an interview with Bob Costas that was conducted, not steroid use in the interview, steroid use in the 90s in baseball. And also during that home run, remember that year, everybody was in root, not everybody, but a lot of people were rooting for that. And it was done under the influence of steroids. Here's our phone number. Thanks, Anita, for your call. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address, talk@WPR.org. And we do have some lines open right now. Michael Bauman is national columnist for MLB.com and has written a lot this week about what McGwire had to say. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we're going to be talking about the federal trial over the constitutionality of California's ban on same-sex marriage, which opened on Monday of this week. And we'll also be speaking with the gentleman who's collecting enough signatures to put a ballot on in California that would prohibit divorce, which he says is the real problem. So this should be an interesting hour. 800-486-8655 for your calls for Michael. Mike from New Berlin is next. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Michael.
Morning.
You know, since baseball began, there's been numerous changes. Changes in the ball, how it's stitched, the density of the cork, changes in the pitcher's mound, the distance from the mound to the catcher, the size of the strike zone, the number of people in the stadium, And you know, so I think we almost need to look at these records decade by decade. You know, who was the best home run hitter for the decade of the 90s, say, for instance? I think it's pretty obvious that Sosa and McGuire were on steroids. You know, they looked like football running backs coming onto the baseball field. They didn't look like traditional baseball players. You know, it's about as obvious as them walking out onto the, you know, up to the box with an aluminum bat. But I think what hasn't changed is the character of the individual, and I think both Sosa and McGuire showed their character when they stood in front of Congress and the American people and they lied about taking the steroids or performance-enhancing drugs. I think if they would have just said, sure, I took them, and I've got the most home runs in that decade, and that, I think, would have said a lot more. Of course they're illegal. I agree with the previous caller about what it does to our youth, but I think it you know, the culture has accepted it for so many years, but again, what hasn't changed is the character of the individual and whether or not they stand up and tell the truth or, you know, as even Pete Rose did, betting against his own team or against, you know, if he'd have just admitted to his character flaw, I think that would have said a lot about that individual.
I'm in absolute agreement with that. I think that an honest and total admission of what you've done in this area is going to be regarded with much more favor by the public and everybody involved than these sort of denials. And there have been cases, I'm thinking about Andy Pettit, Brian Roberts, people like this, who have acknowledged that they used steroids or HGH, however briefly, and they've been accepted back into the good graces of the fans, and they've gone on with their lives, and they've, you know, but they again had sincere, real, honest admissions of what they'd done, and I think people would appreciate that at some point, even though, you know, the guy has cheated, at least he's acknowledged that he's turned it around, and that goes a long way with people.
It is hard to put yourself inside the mind of somebody who's appearing in Washington before a congressional committee talking. I mean, it's a very straightforward question about whether or not you've used these substances, and to say, no, you haven't, to say it again and again and again, and then some years later, well, yes, I did. You wonder how people can lie like that, Michael.
Yeah, they're lying to themselves, too. You know, and that's that was the one troubling thing about the McGuire confession, was that, you know, even though it was heartfelt to some extent and he was truly emotional about it, at the end of the day you get to the point where, well, I took these steroids and I'm really sorry about it, but they didn't help me any.
Exactly.
They didn't help me at the home runs.
Right.
And at that point you just, you know, your admission is kind of flawed.
Right. And
people notice.
But wouldn't you think you'd get caught? Somebody, because there's so many people involved in baseball and people who sold you the drugs, et cetera, that eventually the truth is going to come out.
Well, that's what's happened to so many of these other guys, and even Roger Clemens, you know, who's a larger figure than the in the game than even Mark McGuire. You know, there's always somebody around who sold you this stuff or shot you up or did whatever, you know, they needed to do in terms to keep you going on these drugs. Apparently, from McGuire's testimony, he was extraordinarily private about this, which is the smart thing to be. They didn't discuss it with other people, that nobody knew was going on. And that's possible, I suppose, if he, you know, he did this at home or whatever, at the gym, and he didn't do it at the clubhouse. So, you know, it's apparently possible to go on for years like this and never be caught. It'd be more difficult now because you're going to be tested for it.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. We go to Jim from Milwaukee. Hello, Jim.
Howdy.
Hi.
My question is more about the implications all of this has on the Hall of Fame itself. So, for example, I mean, do we have a room in the Hall of Fame that's the 1990s room and it's Hall of Fame light, and this is a second-tier level of guys that we're letting get through the ballots because we want to have people from this era represented, but we're not going to honor the people who set the records because we don't like the methods that they used? And or do we look for alternatives? I mean, my guy, my hero in baseball is Cal Ripken Jr. I mean, his workmanlike approach and his regularity of service, much like our friend Brett Favre, and just showing up and being there and present for every game for so long. But, I mean, what does it do? Do you just not have anybody from that era in the Hall of Fame? If you're letting in people who are that next tier down, does it water down what it means to even be elected to the Hall of Fame? What's the implication on the institution that this has?
That's a very good question, and maybe we need, you know, like a steroid wing or something. I think that's something the writers are wrestling with on the level of voting for people from this era. And I know at least two people or voters who have said, I'm not voting for anyone from that era at all because I believe that everyone's tainted. And I'm not sure that kind of sweeping generalization is accurate either. But we will see in the case of Bonds and Sosa, Palmeiro, et cetera, what the view of this is going to be. And I think it's going to be fairly harsh. I mean, again, McGuire is the first guy from that era to be on the ballot in a number of years, and he's had less than 25% support every time. So I think that the writers are not inclined towards voting these guys in. But again, the story is not yet told. But I agree with you that if you let people like this in as a routine matter, you're cheapening the Hall of Fame, which you don't want to do.
Why would the writer make the comment that everyone was tainted? Everybody knew about it, or most everybody was using it, and they just got away with it, or what?
There are some people who believe that the use was much more widespread.
Really?
Than suspect that, and again, I, you know, we don't know that. People can speculate about it. I mean, I know that there are some players who didn't use it and who are indignant about the way, you know, these guys have been treated. The fact that they were allowed to make millions of dollars and allowed to tarnish everybody else's reputation along with it. There are people that didn't use, but the fact is we may never know how prevalent it was.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. We go to Habu from Madison. Hi, Habu.
Yes, hello. Good morning, and good to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
You know, far for me to talk baseball, since I'm a NFL fan, and it's heresy to talk baseball at this time of the year. But that's having said that, let me say this couple things. It seems like there is a certain segment of society, I'd call them purists, who kind of are very stricken by all the goings-on of steroids and now whatever they're using, as if baseball was this pristine kind of thing. And if you look through history, baseball was hardly so. It is what it is, and it kind of reflected what society was, and no big deal there. But, you know, you had the Black Sox, you had the exclusion of blacks, and then you had, you know, kind of Jackie Robinson and all of that, and where there were different standards. And so then to say, well, Barry Bonds and McGuire, et cetera, should not be accepted for this, and if they apologize, then we'll consider, is kind of taking it to a very lofty position when it shouldn't be. Yes, these people cheated compared to those who didn't, and that is the way the distinction in my mind lies, and thank you.
Thank you, Haber.
I think generally, for whatever reason, baseball has been held to a higher standard than some of these other sports. I mean, you can look at football, and a guy tests positive for steroids, and he's suspended for 4 games, and it's 2 paragraphs in the paper someplace. This happens in baseball. It's a much bigger deal. Because, and again, you're right, the game has been tarnished on numerous occasions by its own actions and actions of the people on the field or off the field. And yeah, the Black Sox were terrible, and yeah, baseball was segregated until 1947. But baseball, in the case of like Jackie Robinson, baseball was segregated before the armed services were in this country, before housing was, before educational institutions were, Brown versus the Board of Education. Baseball preceded that with integration. It was, in that sense, a leader, and that's like a shining example of the way the game sees itself, and maybe it isn't as pristine as it sees itself, but that's sort of a goal that you keep aiming for. And I think in this case, you can't simply accept these cheaters, these steroid cheats, and say, well, that's the way of the world, and society is like this too. No. I mean, your aim has to be higher than that, even if the reality doesn't always match.
We have a minute left. Sue from Wausau. Hi.
Hi. I feel like I might just be reiterating something that you just said, but to me, the question really here lies in what is it about our society that needs this hero worship so much so that we're willing to tolerate cheaters and say, well, I guess they weren't really so bad if they admit to what they're doing. What is it about our society that needs this kind of hero worship?
Mike.
Yeah, we're worshiping the wrong heroes. You know, it's people who go to work every day and act like decent human beings that are the heroes in this society. It's not some guy who makes $10 million because he took some juice.
Right.
You know, we're all wrong in that. I agree with you completely. That's our yeah, the whole, I don't like these guys being role models, even the good ones. I'm not sure why, because you can hit home runs or throw the ball 98 miles an hour. You get to be a commanding figure in some kid's life. I'm not sure that's even healthy.
Hmm. Thank you, Mike. What's our dog doing?
He's watching reruns of Lassie Come Home. He's not interested in the baseball conversation with the steroids.
So he could be learn to be a hero, huh?
Yeah, he sees himself as heroic.
Yeah, yeah, good. I'm glad. I hope that he becomes that. Thank you, Mike.
It's always a pleasure being on with you and your wonderful audience who asks these intelligent, probing questions.
They're pretty good, aren't they?
They're very good.
They're good. Michael Ballman, our guest this hour, national columnist for MLB.com. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production. If you know people who have done work in Haiti or who are responding to the tremendous tragedy in that country right now, please get a hold of Rhonda. We're going to do a show on this tomorrow, but we would like to speak with people who are involved in humanitarian work there. So her email is fanning@wpr.org.